The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Movie Geeks United and the Art of Cinematography series. In this episode, cinematographer Paul Cameron discusses his collaborations with two of the most visual storytellers in the business, Michael Mann for Collateral and Tony Scott for Man on Fire and Deja Vu. Mr. Cameron shot two new films that will be released in 2012, Man on a Ledge, starring Sam Worthington, and Len Wiseman's remake of Total Recall, which releases in August.
You ventured into, was it music videos primarily at the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, I basically, after I, quick story is I kind of was asked to leave film school after my third year because my friend Charlie Levin and I had gone down to Manhattan. We filmed a video for the B-52's Rock Lobster. At the time, there was no MTV, there was no venue for these, for music videos. And so we were basically kicked out of university, and I spent the better part of the year filming rock and roll in New York City, all types of bands like the, Gang of Four and The Cure, and a lot of, bands like Talking Heads and Public Image and stuff. So it was a very exciting time. It was a great opportunity to film live rock and roll. We also did some smaller commercials. And then I went back and finished my last year of school and got into the union at the same time as a director of photography. Kind of evolved all very kind of quickly together and just kind of motivated and wanted to make it happen. And there were a lot less DPs and opportunities back then, but I certainly saw an opening.
A lot of filmmakers today started kind of on the path you took through music videos and commercials and that sort of thing. What were the most valuable lessons you took from that you could apply later to your feature film work, do you think?
Well, the great thing about music videos is that it's it's wide open, and was able to experiment on different types of photography and cinematography. So, we were able to come up with a visual idea, photographic idea, and kind of experiment with it. And mistakes were welcomed, and we stumbled on a lot of new technology in the process of doing that, like variable frame rates and all kinds of things that, early music videos kind of were wide open. Nobody had done a lot of it before, so it was a great venue to explore and experiment and be kind of fearless.
You've worked several times in with Bruckheimer Productions with Dominic Signe, and Tony Scott. How did that collaboration start? Was it was it through Dominic that you started working on Gone in 60 Seconds and Swordfish, and was there a relationship there that?
Well, I think they're basically two separate relationships. I was familiar with Dom Pena's work. He was a director, cameraman, and he had done some pretty visually extreme stuff, music videos for Janet Jackson and a number of other videos at the time. And he was doing a lot of great commercials, and he was with a company called Propaganda Films. And, was kind of aware of his work, and he'd done a film called California. And I started working with him shooting commercials, and that segued into shooting Gone in 60 Seconds. So Dom Bell gave him like first break on a large motion picture, and then working, with Jerry Bruckheimer for a couple times after that. Unrelated to working with Tony Scott, who I ended up working with separately, and we went on to make a film with Jerry as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, what strikes me about this group of films, between Gone in 60 Seconds and Swordfish and Man on Fire and Deja Vu, is that they're very adventurous visually, and they have a very distinct color palette. And when you're determining that kind of palette, what kinds of conversations came into play on some of these projects for that?
Well, when it comes to color palette and for a film, in these particular films, we're dealing with again two separate filmmakers. So one, Dominic Senna, was very interested in kind of a very saturated stylistic world. He wanted to use bolder colors. He was using them in his music videos. We used them in commercials a lot. And, what started out as a couple films that were going to be pretty naturalistic and monochromatic turned into some fairly colorful looking movies. And I think that was something we explored with a lot of urban city colors. And Dom just wanted to bring more and more color into it. So that was a real directorial choice there. And then working with Tony Scott, Tony was much different because we were exploring, certainly on Man on Fire, we explored a lot of hand crank cameras and using reversal film and with a special photographic process. So we were developing a style of photography and color that was coming out of Denzel's character's psychological state of being kind of a depressed alcoholic. So, he goes through these spells. We wanted this photography in this world to come out of that.
Let me show you what I got here. See this? This is a charger. It's used by convicts to hide money and drugs. They stick it in their body. They tuck it up their rectum. You familiar with that? This, look at me, pencil detonator, timer, used as a receiver, transmitter, C4, highly explosive. You put them all together, you got a bomb. Not very sophisticated, but very powerful. That's what you have in your ass right now. Don't move. Don't move. Don't move. Cheap watch, pager watch. Use to send a page to the receiver that's up your behind right now. So, I'm going to send you a page, which you will receive in 5 minutes. Now. You got less than 5 minutes to tell me what went down between your men and the kidnapper.
I have nothing to do with the kidnapper.
4 minutes and 30 seconds.
I don't know him.
You don't know? 4 minutes and 25 seconds. 4 minutes and 20 seconds. Are you sure?
When you're designing a film with such a bold visual structure, is there ever a danger of pushing it too far? Do you think about that at all?
Well, I always think about it. I mean, you know, anytime you use color in a movie, or anytime I use color in a movie, I wonder how far am I going with it? In the case of Gone in 60 Seconds, it was less, you know, because we were really developing, you know, early urban light colors, mm-hmm. you know, like the sodium and mercury colors. So we didn't have very specific gels back then, so there were gel packs to try to emulate the color. And, you know, sometimes mixing various color temperatures, it produced, you know, a little too much of a chromatic look. And that, you know, that film was meant to be what we call a skip bleach print, like a silver retention print. So it was supposed to have kind of a desaturated look. Then went on to DVD transfer, and that's where a lot of the color came back in, and Dom pushed a lot of the color. And then on Swordfish, that one, personally, what everybody's used to in that film with all the color on the DVD now and on Netflix, it's overly saturated. It was never actually meant to be that colorful. So it's a good example of color being taken a little too far. That was also meant to be kind of a desaturated film. And actually, theatrical prints were also silver retention prints and kind of a desaturated look. But very unlike what you see on the air now. It's just highly chromatic. You know.
Yeah, is that frustrating for you?
You know, it's ultimately it's a director's choice, you know, and you know, when you apply color in general, there's always a chance that it can be accentuated more later on a digital or a negative. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, lent it to being more colorful as well.
Yeah, I understand from Tony Scott's shooting style that he's very unique. That he covers things with a lot of cameras, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's, you know, the one thing working with Tony Scott is, you know, the very beginning, I could tell right away he wanted to use multi cameras, you know, 2-3 cameras, and, you know, then the next project 3-4 cameras, and the next film, you know, 5-6 cameras, and then suddenly cameras just everywhere, and you know, it's kind of daunting at first, because you feel like, you know, how you know, can I concentrate on the shot, you know, or telling the story, and then, you know, in the process of kind of learning his style, letting go, I learned a lot from his approach, and what I grew to admire, and I've still employed a lot in, you know, later films, is, you know, the use of multi-cameras and kind of the freedom of not worrying about exact eye lines and exact matching angles and, you know, a lot of the things that govern filmmaking in a very traditional way, Tony kind of broke away from. So it's extremely liberating. You know, it can kind of be dangerous, and it can feel unfamiliar to a lot of filmmakers. But, you know, I still love getting, you know, 3-4 angles of almost the same shot at the same time, as long as we can, you know, we've got the manpower and cameras to do it, you know, because you never know. It's like a slight profile shot where you get a glint in the eye, or, you know, a tear coming out of an eye or something on a profile, as opposed to a front shot, is, you know, can have a dynamic to it visually and emotionally that, you know, that's kind of a surprise later, and you know, it's kind of a fascinating journey with him that way.
Yeah, and another adventurous director that you've worked with is Michael Mann, of course, and I mean, Collateral is notable for many reasons, but this was one of the first movies that utilized the high-def digital technology. Was it a consideration because of the kind of the flexibility of shooting night sequences with that equipment?
Well, Collateral, you know, at the time, digital cinematography was basically just, you know, barely born. It wasn't. There were very few digital cameras available. You know, the Sony 900 was available, Sony 950. The Viper was just coming out. There were just these, you know, two or three cameras that were available. And Michael had experimented on a couple of shots on Ali, where they shot with the Sony 900, you know, with no lights in the middle of the night. I looked at those, and they were also doing some tests for a TV show that Michael was producing as well. And I looked at some of that footage, and it, you know, had kind of an acidic, acrid quality to it that I thought was fairly interesting. You know, but at first I was kind of resisting it because, you know, I felt like I could deliver whatever look you wanted on film. Then through, you know, a serious, you know, month of testing with, you know, numerous film outs and, you know, all color correction all the way through, you know, release, just, you know, could not sit in the theater and look at those images without feeling like the film had to be shot digitally.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just much different then because it was like, to me, it was like picking a film stock. It was, you know, again, because it was the beginning of, you know, digital cinematography, basically, for feature films, you know, although people had done it on a prosumer level, nobody was doing it theatrically. So the same shot, you know, from film just didn't feel the same, you know, the Sony 900 and shots of the Viper filmed out. Just again produced this kind of, you know, city urban night tactile reality. So you know, I walked in the office, Michael's office, and I said, I think, you know, we should shoot it on digitally, and he welcomed the idea of it because, you know, initially it was his idea. Although, you know, we both looked at each other like, we're really ready for this. So we had no idea what it was the beginning of.
Hey, come on, I'll take you.
I got five stops to make.
What's your name?
Max.
Max, I'm Vincent.
I'll meet you in the alley behind the building.
Oh no! What the hell?
You killed? Red light, Max.
Hold on.
Man, you were gonna drive me around tonight and never be the wiser, but we're in the plan B. Now we gotta make the best of it. Improvise, adapt to the environment. Whatever, man, we gotta roll with it.
You just met him once and you kill him like that?
But I should only kill people after I get to know them?
I'm not up for this.
What are you gonna do about it?
There's a man named Vincent.
I got another deal, Wade.
He's already killed witnesses. He's coming to kill you.
Max! I do this for a living!
When was the last time you shot film?
Well, strangely enough, I shot film on a little more than a year ago on a movie called Man on a Ledge that's coming out in January.
Mm.
And I just tested less than a year ago. I tested for 2 months on Total Recall up in Toronto, and was ready to go 2D anamorphic film with Len Wiseman at the helm. And literally 8 days before production on an 80-day, $160 million movie, we switched over to the Red Epic.
Wow.
And, that was a kind of a monumental shift for me, and just kind of a photography once again.
Did you feel like you were sacrificing anything by switching over from film to the red?
Sure. I mean, I think, any director of photography or cinematographer that's had the opportunity to shoot a lot of film and, feels like they're trading something off by shooting digitally now. I mean, listen, there's attributes, to digital cinematography that are unique and, idiosyncratic to itself, but, there's something about the process of shooting film and the control of the director of photography shooting film that's way different than the whole digital cinematography realm. And, I have a couple points of view on it. It's like it took film, 100 years of technology and craftsmanship and artistry to get it to the level that it's at.
Right.
And along comes digital cinematography, and suddenly it's supposed to be as good as or potentially better than already, and it's been around basically 10 years. So that's a tough one. And the other way I look at it is, the technology changes so much, so quickly, and from camera systems to digital, color space or whatever, it's changing all the time. But it's basically all these cameras they're just different film stock. Now somebody wants to shoot a film, I'll still approach it the same way. If you want to shoot it on film, why? Why are we going to do it? Why would you want to do it on this camera? Why would you do it on Red or an Alexa or, Sony F65 or any of these cameras? They all have a unique quality, and they're not replacing film yet. I think it's an interesting time, but it's still film is not over yet.
It's clutching on. just before I let you go, Man on a Ledge in January. That's the Sam Worthington film, and then Total Recall. That's a summer 2012 release, is it?
Yeah.
What do you think what kind of new muscles do you feel like you flexed on those two projects?
Well, Man on a Ledge is a pretty classic film, from director Asger Leffen. I feel like, the challenge in that one was how to make a film where a guy's basically on a ledge outside of a window for two-thirds of a movie interesting. We had a set in New York City at the Roosevelt Hotel that basically got pushed out on weekends. We shot it for about 4 weekends, and it's 17 floors up, and basically go out to a corner on railroad wheels and top. I cantilevered a technocrane over the edge of Madison Avenue and 45th Street, and I stuck an Aquila crane and Strata crane over from an upper rooftop, flying over the streets and over the ledge. So, that was kind of the stretch on that one, is how to work with limited budget and make that film engaging. And Total Recall is a much different film. It's a huge summer release next year, and with a wonderful director, Lud Wiseman, and fantastic actors Colin Farrell and Jessica Biel and Kate Beckinsale and Bryan Cranston. And, visually, that film Recall for me was, I had prepped the entire movie to shoot 2:40 anamorphic 2D film, and we switched at the very, very end over to Epic, and I still incorporated some older anamorphic lenses and basically had mirrors put in worked very closely with D. Nag, who did Inception and the Harry Potters visual effects company. And it was nice because they let me do my thing. You know, I wanted to keep Recall kind of as raw and visceral as possible for a big visual effects movie. And they were very, very welcoming in how I wanted to kind of deconstruct the image. So.
Yeah.
We'll see. It's you know, it's good. It's an unorthodox visual effects movie because we shot as much of it live action as we could. All the car chases with hover cars were done on roadways, just with backgrounds that are going to get CG maps. And you know, we try to handle it as with the least amount of green screen as possible. And I think we're going to get some good results out of it.
That's it for this episode of our Art of Cinematography series. You can listen in on additional episodes and interviews with many of today's top cinematographers, including Robert Richardson, Vilmos Zsigmond, Alan Davia, Paul Cameron, Jeff Cronenwith, and more, by visiting moviegeeksunited.net/art of cinematography.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.